Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, today with Hoffman Center nutritionist Layla Mudin, and it is part two of Q&A with Layla. Each week, we endeavor to answer your questions. You can send your questions to us via radio program at AOL.com. We'll answer as many of them as we can, if they are appropriate and if they are of general interest. All right, Layla, we got another question. This is a good one.
Yeah. This is from Dennis. Isn't there a difference between poaching and soft boiling versus scrambling or frying eggs, which oxidizes them? Well, yes, there is. Poaching and soft boiling is going to do less because you're not agitating the yolk, so to speak. Scrambling and frying will oxidize them. But, you know, this isn't the whole story. People are very concerned. I get this question a lot, Dr. Hoffman, especially from our patients and other listeners. Well, it oxidizes the cholesterol if you beat the egg to scramble it or if you fry it and do this.
Right.
Well, guess what? There are many ways to oxidize it.
Yeah.
You know, your stomach acid will also oxidize it.
Mm-hmm.
You can have a poached egg and a soft-boiled egg, non-oxidized yolk or non-oxidized cholesterol in the yolk. But once you eat it and you begin to digest it, it's going to oxidize.
Right.
That's what happens.
Right. But also, you know, isn't it a little bit of a factor of how many antioxidants you have on board? That if, say, you eat the egg with some really good quality antioxidants, you know, maybe from blueberries or something like that. Oh, that's kind of a weird combination.
Blueberries and some grilled tomato. Get some lycopene.
Yeah.
Glass of green, you know, a cup of green tea.
So say you make like an omelet, which is frankly putting your eggs at risk of being oxidized because you're whipping them and heating them. But say it's made with great ingredients like fresh organic tomatoes,
mm-hmm.
and fresh sautéed arugula and some onions.
Go ahead and throw some garlic in there too. Then
garlic, onions,
yeah.
You know, all those kinds of things. I mean, there's infinite combinations. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, right. So then there's the issue, you know, what is oxidized cholesterol? And we actually measure that in our patients.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that's so much a function of diet. I think that's more a function of the metabolism of the patient, is that some people can eat a lot of eggs that are – and by the way, I make a lot of fried eggs. I prefer them that way.
Me too.
And, you know, I'll admit to it. And omelets – and just plain scrambled eggs without any additives. I'll use mushrooms sometimes. I'll use onions. I'll use a lot of avocado sometimes. I'll slice some avocado and fold it into the eggs. And that's a good thing.
Yeah.
But we can actually measure oxidized LDL. And to some extent, I think that's a function of, you know, is the patient in a challenged state vis-a-vis inflammation, free radicals, and then their cholesterol becomes oxidized.
Glycosylated hemoglobin, all of that, that will oxidize.
Yeah. You know, high sugar intake,
mm-hmm.
Chemicalized diet, you know, these are things that may promote that.
I think it's more important the quality of the egg. You want to get, you know, you want to get organic and cage-free, and the omega-3 eggs are probably a good idea too, but I think the most important thing being organic. So there isn't really the hormone pesticide factor or anything like that.
And,
so
you know,
I think that's important.
I'm proud to say that, and you can probably also reiterate this, that we were in the forefront of calling for the reintegration of eggs into the American diet, because there was a time where eggs were really stigmatized as being harmful, and now we're seeing more and more of the benefits of eggs. Eggs being the number one source of lutein, which is beneficial for the retina and staves
mm-hmm.
off macular degeneration.
Mm-hmm.
So,
very,
you know,
very important.
Yeah. So recently what I put up a photo on Facebook of an organic egg versus a commercial egg. And it's amazing because you can see the color difference. The commercial egg has sort of a, you know, sort of a pale yellow color, and the organic grass-fed egg from, and I get it from the farmer's market that we have once a week near my building here in Midtown Manhattan on the East Side, and it's this bright orange. And it's, you know, it's
that,
like,
head has been well fed.
Yeah, it's like the setting sun. So it's it suggests that there is a big difference in nutrient content between the commercial eggs and the organic grass-fed eggs.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. All right. Dennis, I hope that answers your question. We have a question here from David. Dr. Hoffman and Layla, what supplements can you recommend for our 26-year-old otherwise healthy daughter with psoriasis that is spreading? This is not psoriatic arthritis yet. She had laser therapy by a dermatologist and has tried a gluten-free diet with only limited improvement. Now, her rheumatologist just did a battery blood work, and if negative, wants to start her on Humira.
Right.
I have to say something quickly about this, Dr. Hoffman. Psoriasis,
sure.
A gluten-free diet is very, very beneficial, but I see psoriasis will still stick around until that patient completely eliminates dairy.
Okay.
I see that a lot.
Right. And frankly, sometimes psoriasis doesn't quit with simply the elimination of the instigating factors, because psoriasis is an inflammatory disorder. And the analogy I sometimes use is, you know, if you have a forest fire and you capture the arsonist who set the fire, does that put the fire out? And the answer is no. The fire still rages. At least nobody's pouring gasoline on it, but it will still continue. And many patients who've had serious problems that are due to one cause or another, you know, whether it be psoriasis or multiple sclerosis or ulcerative colitis, any of these itises, simply the elimination of the instigating factor does not result in immediate cure. It may take a long time, or it might require other things to suppress the inflammation.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So, in a typical protocol that we use for psoriasis, we will try to identify the foods that could be a problem. Nightshades could be an issue, for example, too.
That's true.
You know,
tomatoes, white potatoes, peppers, eggplant.
And we might even suggest
peppers.
Something like a paleo diet for that, where you eliminate cereal grains and utilize animal proteins that are, you know, grass-fed and organic.
And stop all dairy. Absolutely stop all dairy. Yeah.
And so among the supplements that are helpful, let's tick off some of them. The anti-inflammatory supplements like curcumin and boswellan.
Curcumin, boswellan, omega-3s, and some omega-6 borage oil is helpful for skin.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great idea.
Right.
Let's see. Yeah, the omega-3s, boswellan, curcumin, we like, let's see. Would you, because this person is autoimmune, we would probably look for leaky gut as well. We would look for possibly candida, maybe related to the psoriasis. We would look for definitely gluten sensitivity, even though this person will benefit from a gluten-free diet, maybe not all the way, but to some extent. And other food allergies, as you said.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So that would really be the way to go. It does require a workup. So, yeah.
Yep,
there's
so there,
lots of things to do before Humira, so yeah, definitely that.
Okay.
Yeah.
What else is on our?
All right. Best of luck with your daughter. Let's see. Lorraine writes, I know you can't answer every inquiry, but I just wanted to share this with you. And she sent us a link to Mega Spore Biotic. And what they say is, forget what you know about probiotics and learn why Mega Spore Biotic is essential for your patients in practice, and why so many probiotics don't actually qualify as probiotics because of the way they're prepared. And spores, being a Mega Spore Biotic, is nature's design for a true probiotic.
Sounds like a pitch.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
well, you know, the answer is, you know, at this stage of the game, you know, I'm not going to put that down, because there may be something to that. But at this point in the game, we don't know that much about which probiotic to use for which specific condition. It seems to be, unfortunately, a little bit empirical, like a matter of trial and error. Like, you know, use this, and if you like it, keep using it. And if it helps your condition, great. But in terms of the science of which probiotics work for specific problems, it's in its infancy. But more and more, there's a lot of research underway on this, and a lot of companies feel that this is going to be a bonanza for them if they can discover and patent a product that has medical applications or health benefits that they can document.
Yeah.
So more and more, we're discovering that certain species of probiotics have certain attributes. We know, for example, that Saccharomyces boulardii, a product called Florastor, is very helpful for C. difficile diarrhea. We know that certain species of lactobacillus are good for preventing urinary tract infections or counteracting vaginal yeast infections. Mm-hmm. We know that certain of them can actually increase immunity to even upper respiratory infections. And we know that some actually help with constipation and reduce irritable bowel syndrome. But it's still the whole thing, the whole science is in its infancy. And what's also unpredictable is, and you know this as well as I do, Layla, that for, it's different strokes for different folks. Some people, you know, you give them the most plausible probiotic and they say, I don't like it. It's bothered my stomach. And other people will say, oh, it's a miracle. I, you know, now have normal formed bowel movements. It's great. You know, all my life I've suffered from IBS, and now with this, just a simple addition of this probiotic, it's transformed my life.
How often do we see some other, you know, new news revealed by the Human Microbiome Project?
It's amazing.
It's all in its infancy right
now. Yeah.
So it's a very exciting time to be finding out all of this. And
incidentally, there was a new study. This is on the issue of what's called fecal transplantation, which they allow only now for C. difficile. Officially, that there's an FDA protocol for that, where what they used to do is they would do a colonoscopy and they would take this stuff and inject it deep inside the colon. Well, what they discovered is that they can give the poop in a pill. Mm-hmm. They can make a poop pill from a donor and have the person swallow it, and they get just as good results. But tellingly, the encapsulation is a time-release encapsulation that's acid-resistant to allow it to pass through the stomach. For aesthetic reasons, too, because, hey, have you ever taken, like, a peppermint capsule and kind of re-burped the peppermint taste? Or a fish oil capsule and get a fish oil taste? I'm glad that that's enteric-coated because you're swallowing it.
Yeah.
I didn't even think of that. Where is your mind these today?
Okay. Our next
question is worth it because it cures this terrible disease. I mean, it sounds like, oh man, what a horrible thing to do. Who would do that?
I know.
But if you're within an inch
know,
of your life, you know, and you're literally, you can die of C. difficile because you have debilitating diarrhea, and you can end up looking like a concentration camp victim, emaciated and weak because of debilitating diarrhea, and you simply take one poop pill and you're cured. It's amazing.
I think people are frightened because, you know, E. coli, you know, hand to mouth, fecal matter, you know, the E. coli doesn't belong in the stomach. It belongs lower down.
But it really shows us the power of the microbiome. And there's a profound revolution in this that we're just beginning to understand.
Yeah. So we'll look forward to more of that. This next question comes from Forrest. Dr. Joel Fuhrman, on a recent PBS special, End Dieting Forever, makes the above claims. Here are the claims. Animal protein raises IGF-1, increases cancer risk. Vegetable oils turn quickly to body fat. What is your reaction to these claims?
Well, so let me just situate this, because PBS is a very respected venue, and it's public television. There seems to be free of commercial taint, and anything that's on PBS, you would say, this has got to be the real deal, because they've accepted this on PBS. Here's how it works, and I've been offered specials on PBS. You come up with some money to basically produce your own show, because that's how it works.
They do it?
Yeah. And you have to have a lot of money to produce a professional looking show. So it could be, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars. They partner with you because they say, well, that's great. This is a special interest. And then if you're a public figure that has some traction and there's some interest in you, then you sell the videos or the, you know, DVDs of the thing, and you sell them at, you know, a lot more than they actually cost as part of a donation to the PBS channel. So it's a win-win for the practitioner who funds this, and it's because they get a lot of publicity, and it's a win-win for the channel. So I said, look, I think there's something a little bit unwholesome about this, and I don't think that this is a really good way to do messaging. So that's number one. Dr. Fuhrman, you know, is a doctor who is a vegetarian doctor who also believes in fasting. And I think he helps a lot of people, because that can really help certain people. You know, getting rid of the junk in your diet, eating a really clean diet, detoxing, losing weight.
Everybody agrees.
Yeah.
Whether they're paleo, whether they're vegan, whether they're low carb, whether they're...
Get the junk out of your diet.
Get the junk out of your diet. Everybody agrees.
I was vegetarian, you know, for many years, for well over, you know, 10, 15 years. And it really helped me because I detoxed from a typical American diet, which I'd eaten as a young man and in college and thereafter in my 20s and 30s. I followed a very strict vegetarian macrobiotic diet, and I think I really got rid of a lot of that junk that accumulated in my body. It didn't work for me long term, and now I'm on a more omni diet, except that I don't eat wheat and dairy. But what he's making is sort of an ideological statement, not a scientific statement. I don't think you can make statements that meat is the cause of cancer. I don't think you can make, because there's so many exceptions to that rule.
That was also quoted in the China study.
Right. That's sort of along those lines. Look, IGF-1 is something that is generated in two ways. Yes, it's generated by protein, but it's also generated by excessive carbohydrates.
Yeah.
And it's generated by excess diet.
Yeah, so, IGF is insulin-like growth factor.
Yes, yes.
For those who don't know.
Right.
Yeah.
And so the people who want to, look, this is how it works. First, you make up your mind about your type of diet that you want to follow, like, you know, Dr. Atkins or Joel Fuhrman. You know, Dr. Atkins, a partisan of a high protein, low carb diet. And then you muster all the scientific studies you can to buttress your contention that your diet is preeminent.
Mm-hmm.
And you really, the devil can quote scriptures to his own cause. And you can find substantiation for all manner of diets because the evidence is very diverse. So I don't really buy it. There are also studies that suggest that vegetarian diets may actually somewhat increase the incidence of cardiovascular disease and cancer. I mean, it's hard to believe, but actually I've seen studies that have compiled that kind of data. And so
we've seen that in some of our patients.
And part of the problem is that meat is a marker for people who eat carelessly, frankly. And vegetarianism is a marker for people who eat very, very carefully and fastidiously and really pay attention to their health in a lot of other ways besides diet.
I am so glad you said this. I am so glad, because that's exactly what is happening. You know, when somebody says meat eater, oh, you're a meat eater. You're eating cheeseburgers and fries and you're smoking and you're guzzling beer and you're all of this.
Yeah, yeah.
No.
Because, look, I eat meat, and so does, you know, an overweight Green Bay Packers fan in Wisconsin who eats, you know, tons of pepperoni pizza and bologna and cheese sandwiches and tons of, you know, hot dogs and breakfast sausages laced with chemicals. We both eat meat. But what's the similarity between us? Well, I'm of normal weight. I eat organic or grass-fed meat whenever I can. I also eat tons of vegetables, and I eat very little in the way of refined carbohydrates with my meat. I'm a careful eater, but I eat meat. An indiscriminate eater might include a lot of meat in their diet, but eat, you know, overall indiscriminately. So you might say, well, oh, the studies show that people who eat meat are less healthy. Well, that may be because eating meat is a marker of dietary lack of discretion, and vegetarianism is the very fastidious people who stay thin and exercise, and they're very careful to eat organic and yada yada. Okay, but also, you know, a lot of meat eaters don't eat enough vegetables. I eat a ton of vegetables for lunch today. I actually had some leftover chicken, and I had a big old, you know, fresh arugula and lettuce salad with chopped walnuts and onions and peppers and tomatoes, and with homemade balsamic vinegar, olive oil, and garlic dressing. And, you know, it's a good thing we're doing this interview by phone, because I probably have garlic on my breath as we as we speak. So we're doing it on the phone today. But you know, this is a day where I'm, you know, doing my work at home and not coming in the office. But, you know, just to give you, that's my take on that, is that there, you know, look, you can push this notion. And by the way, fasting has benefits. Intermittent fasting has benefits. And at a recent Alzheimer's study, one of the features of that was they told people don't eat for at least 12 hours a night. In other words, observe a fast, a true fast. Don't eat 3 hours before you go to sleep. And that actually helps the system reduce inflammation. So people who eat constantly or have a very big dinner and then they wake up and eat big breakfast, that doesn't allow the system to rest. I think fasting, intermittent fasting has some benefits. And that's what, you know, Dr. Furman promotes, and I think he helps a lot of people, but it's not a one-size-fits-all.
Yeah.
All
right? The other claim that Dr. Furman makes, according to Forrest, is that vegetable oils turn quickly to fat. Fat doesn't necessarily turn to fat in the body. It's too many carbohydrates that do. But vegetable oils are unhealthy for another reason.
Right.
They contain a lot of omega-6 fats.
Exactly, yeah.
We don't want that. We're talking about corn oil, sunflower, safflower oil, soybean oil, cottonseed, even peanut oil. You know, you have to take that in lesser doses anyway. So too much vegetable oil in the diet.
Excess carrot juice turns into fat in the body. You know, it can. I mean, because it's, you know, full of sugar, so.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course, too many calories overall.
Too much brown rice is going to turn into fat. You know?
Exactly. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. So anyway, all right. So that's all the time we have for today. I know we have a couple more questions, but if you have additional questions, please send them to radioprogram@AOL.com. I also sent you a couple, Layla, that I picked up off Facebook because I do questions from time to time on Facebook. I tell listeners there to keep listening to the Q&A with Layla because eventually we'll catch up to their questions. And I invite you to check out drhoffman.com because we have a great recent podcast on the subject of natural immune enhancement, and also a recent newsletter article, which is now posted at drhoffman.com on 17 nutraceuticals that can promote immunity. That was our theme last week.
Mm-hmm.
And lots of good content. Also, natural tips for Halloween treats, how to avoid some of the nutritional scourges of Halloween for your kids. Well, that's what Nancy Reagan said, and look what good it did in terms of the drug epidemic. We got to give kids some leeway, but you know, we explored that in a podcast last week. So, so that's all the time we have, and I thank you for joining us today, Layla. And I'll see you back in the office tomorrow.
Thank you, Dr. Hoffman.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine Podcast.